welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today we're in East London and we are in fact standing on a racing track. We are inside at the XL and we're about to link up with a man who is leading the charge for Avalanche Andretti on the Formula E circuit. He's also a Red Bull Racing simulator driver and we're at his home race. Jake Dennis, welcome to the podcast.
You've done your research.
You have done your research.
Home race, massive event for me, the team. There's a lot going on for sure, but I'm really excited for it. I mean, we're inside right now. Don't ever normally see this type of arena on a motorsport, you know, track. You know, it's half indoor, half outdoor, so it's really cool.
Third season with Formula 3.
Yeah.
You've had quite the year so far. Being the home race, do you feel a pressure?
I think there's always pressure when you come to your home race, but on top of all that, I've obviously got the championship on my shoulders, family, friends coming, so I just feel a natural progression of pressure as I've come towards the end of the season. You know, it's crunch time now. It's where we can't afford to make any more mistakes, and we need to bring our A game.
So just to the right of us, we're actually walking past your home base.
Yeah.
Can you take us inside?
You can, yeah. Yeah, come on in. This is my side of the garage, Jay Dennis and then Andre Lotter. This is just some of the bodywork. Right now the car's just being prepped because one of the cool things with Formula E is the cars never go back to base. They literally just go from city to city. So as soon as you finish the race in Rome, you literally just launch it in a big container, put it on the next ship and then send it straight to London. So the guys...
And you have nothing to do with that.
I have nothing to do with that.
You get on a plane.
I have these geniuses to do all that for me and sort out the software, fix the car if I've caused any damage. Thankfully, we're halfway through prep now. It's a Thursday, that's normally prep day.
Okay.
But yeah, you see we've got the front wing.
Yeah.
Pretty beastie, these are the expensive things. This is what they're very easy to break.
Yeah.
This is what the mechanics hate us for if we break one of these.
And then when we say they're expensive, what are we talking?
Well, I actually would dread to think the exact number, but probably I would say 50 or something like that, 50k.
Wow.
So, I mean, not F1 level for sure. F1's like 250k nowadays. It's crazy expensive how much that is. But yeah, this is all like a spec part. So this is the same for every team,
yeah.
Jaguar, Porsche, us. This doesn't change at all. And then all this bodywork is absolutely spec. So all the same, just different liveries.
Yeah.
Probably the coolest thing for a driver is their seat. This is basically completely molded to my body.
Okay.
As we can see, it's pretty worn out now because it's towards the end of the season.
So this same seat you've used in every single race?
Every single race this year, yeah. And then you generally get a new one each year, but I'll probably continue to use this next year. We'll just rewrap it. But it's laser scanned, so you sit in your seat, they make some special foam around you. I would very much say like snowboarding boots, something like that. You put them in and then they make this foam around it.
Yeah.
And then that's like your perfect mold. It's exactly the same as this. And then they just try and get as much weight out of it as possible. So they laser scan it, remove any like excess foam, which doesn't need to be there.
How heavy is that? Can I have a little hold?
It's about...
Oh, I'm going to go with 4.5 kilos.
It's less.
Less?
It's even less.
No way!
Sometimes it says on the back. This is like a 2.6 kilos, I would say. Even maybe less.
Incredible.
Super light. And then you've got the shell here, which it sits in. But a really cool piece. Something which drivers are very particular on. It's our lifeline, you know. It's what we feel everything through. So if it's not quite correct and you're feeling niggles here and there or like saying anything, you need to be comfortable. Football boots, race seat, snowboarding boots, anything like that. If it's not right, you're...
I love how you reference the snowboard boots as if mine were perfectly moulded to my feet. Not
I
a snowboarding.
They definitely
were.
Were they not?
They were off the shelf. Off.
No way.
So looking at this, how is it different from a Formula One car? I've heard the term regenning.
Yeah, a lot.
What does that mean?
So basically the biggest difference is that it's fully electric.
Okay.
In Formula One, obviously just a normal combustion engine, fuel it to go. Whereas this, it needs to be charged. And one of the cool things what Formula E do is that if I just drove that flat out for a whole race, I wouldn't make it to the end. So every time you brake and hit the brake pedal, it recharges the energy back into the battery. And the people which can do that the most efficiently is really the fastest. So different techniques for different teams, you know, Porsche will run different strategies to the likes of Jaguar or DS powertrains or Mahindra. So different teams have different styles and it's all down to what software works best. But yeah, this weekend, we think Jaguar will be extremely strong. It suits their powertrain very well. But high speed circuits for us and the Porsche package, it generally suits us a little bit better.
So the natural career path of a racing driver traditionally is through the junior ranks, likes of
Formula 3, Formula 4, you generally just progress, Formula Junior they call it.
So how did it work for you? A lad from Leicester.
A Leicester boy. Just did the natural progression in karting. You know, I actually started when I was 8 years of age, which is quite normal back then. Now they start at the age of like 4. It's crazy.
Wow, that is so young.
It's so young. Like when I like see, you know, little 4 year olds, I'm like, how can you put him or her in a go-kart and expect him to know what pedals are and brake and accelerate? It's unbelievable. But I started when I was 8, which is quite normal back then. And then just progressed into single seaters at 15, which at that age was really young. And I was, I did the usual like F4, F3, and then I did a category called GP3, which is basically like F2 type thing.
Yeah.
And I was quite successful in them, but then I moved to sports cars, which is basically the road cars, what you see, you know, like an M3 or an M4 or a Ferrari.
That's got to be cool driving, road cars on a track.
But then they make them like a race car version. So they put slick tires, roll cage, big wings, put like, strip it completely. So it looks like a proper racing car, and they are extremely fast. But that's quite natural to go from that and then back into single seaters of Formula E. So I did that for Aston Martin for 3 years. I was Aston Martin driver. And then an opportunity came up in Formula E. They were like, we want to give you the opportunity to test, see if you're any good. So I went through like the whole evaluation test, which was a couple of days, all the simulator work, and then I eventually got the job and came into Formula E and now no longer do sports cars. But yeah, most people just go F4, F3, F2, and then we'll probably go either F1 or Formula E.
So what do you think it is that contributed to your ability to drive a Formula E car so well? Because it is very different.
It's very different. I think there's a few factors. I think from a young kid, I've always been able to adapt to certain situations quite quickly anyway, just in general life or a race car. And then putting yourself in like difficult situations, like from a young age of single seaters and different categories of driving different cars. So swapping from F3 to sports cars, like when I was racing for Aston Martin, they have completely different styles of driving, but you need to be fast in both. And then when I switched to FE, it was different again, the way you drive. And I was just able to pick up the techniques quite quickly and adapt, you know. And that's why we almost became champion in my rookie season, but it slipped away from us on the last race of the year. I just say having an adaptive personality has generally helped me in Formula E, even though it's not always about racing cars,
I'd say it's key within any sport, right?
Yeah,
it's the ability
100%.
To adapt to the environment around you. So today we are indoors.
Yeah.
To me, that seems like a strange place to race. Do you have to do much adapting when it comes to racing within the XL?
Just the biggest difference is like the surface. Like in the indoor arena here is super high grip, so very different to what we experience outside on the zebra crossings, the bus stop marks, you know, the red lines. It's so different. So this in here honestly feels like you're driving a Formula One car. Has so much grip. You like, you can do anything you want with the car. And then as soon as you go outside at turns 5, it then just turns into like to an ice rink. It's like a complete transition.
When it comes to tyres and stuff, that must be tricky to make the right pick.
Well, the best thing about Formula E is that the tyres we use are completely like one spec. So whether it's rain or dry, we use the same one. So there's no decision you have to make regarding which tyres to pick. So that sort of takes it out. But it also brings difficulties because it's a road tyre, basically. This tyre is capable of going on a road car for sustainability reasons and stuff like that. So it's part of something which it generates a lot of heat. You know, it's not a slick tyre like you see in Formula One. And it's just a really cool aspect of what Formula E bring.
Now, one thing I'm particularly interested in, as a former athlete myself, was sound. Sound to me was everything. So toes, heels, and listening to the sound and the crunch of the snow for speed.
So with a Formula E car, it's considerably quieter than a petrol or diesel car.
It definitely is.
Have you had to adapt to that, and does it affect the way you drive?
Yeah, when I first jumped in a Formula E car, the first thing I noticed was like the wind. All you hear is wind. Ooh. Which is really bizarre. Like, you've gone from your whole career of hearing like, you know, V10, V8, or like just a turbo engine, so some sound, vibrations. You jump in this and it's like no vibrations at all. It's super smooth and just wind.
Yeah, so how do you feel it? Because I feel and I hear the snow.
Yeah.
So when that's removed, what are you relying on?
Just visuals, you know, like you still have the feeling of like how the car is behaving, whether it's like understeering or oversteering, we call it, which is where the tire is sliding, which tire is sliding. But ultimately it's, you just go visual aspects. You can see your front tires. So if you start to brake too late, you can see them start to stop locking and you start go forward. But it's just, it is definitely a weird factor of Formula E. Yeah. It's something which every driver had to adapt to, but you still have the aspect of what the car is doing underneath you. But yeah, I can imagine for you guys, or when you're on the snow, it's so important to hear that compared to what we have in Formula E, where there's a lot going on elsewise. But yeah, there's just a lot of different factors, not just sound coming into Formula E or motorsport. There's so many different things going on with software or the tires or just what you feel through your arse, basically.
Strong glutes.
Strong glutes.
Maybe not too strong, right?
That's true.
Because they've got to have the feeling.
You need to be a flat arse for a racing driver is probably better.
See,
to be honest.
I would not be in a good position with that then. Iron glutes from snowboarding. Now, one thing I'm also really interested in is the sustainability efforts of this tour.
Yeah.
Do you think Formula E has the ability to pioneer technological change across a variety of sports?
I mean, it's certainly like we're setting an example. That's really the biggest thing. I think right now we're trying to do our absolute utmost to bring complete net zero to a sport. And you know, you see Formula One, for example, trying to claim that there'll be net zero by 2030, which for me, I just don't see feasible. Whereas for us, we're a fully electric racing series. We're trying to bring sustainability. And I think what we do right now is super beneficial for not only the manufacturers of bringing technology to road cars, but also just promoting a good image alongside sport in general. And I don't see any other sport doing anything to what we're doing right now.
How sustainable is it though to have a tour that still travels around the world? How is that counteracted?
That's the thing, you know, you don't want to take away the element of like coolness. Anyone can make a sustainable sport, but it'll probably end up being really boring. You just sat in one room and that's that. So Formula E obviously have to do certain elements to make it exciting. And, you know, we race in the coolest locations. We're racing in Cape Town, like America, India, London, all in the cities. So it's a big effort from those guys getting the logistics right. You know, we don't just race on a circuit which has been already designed. We rock up, build the circuit around the city. We're racing like on pedestrian roads, and
that's pretty freaking cool, isn't it?
It's really cool. Yeah, it's one of the best things about Formula E is, and you're in the city. So when you don't have a double header, you just race Saturday. The pie is always quite good Saturday night.
See, I need to come to one of those races, that's on my doorstep.
Yeah, not on your doorstep. And if you win Saturday, you can't celebrate because you've got to do it all again Sunday. So that's the mistake I made one year.
Where's the party?
Well, here's Sunday, so it's the last race of the year. We've got to go to a gala, which is always a bit meh. But normally, the start of the season, like Monaco's always a good one. You should get yourself out to that one. Saturday party in Monaco.
I might have been, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, I went to the Formula One this year.
Okay, so Formula One, I mean, that's another level for sure.
It was incredible. But I think I'm going to invite myself to a Formula E party.
Yeah, Formula E Monaco one is very cool.
That sounds like a goodie.
It's a good one.
A little dip in the sea as well, a little bit of sunshine, slightly different.
Yeah, the weather's normally better than here.
To the Thames, but you can swim actually in this part of the Thames.
Really?
Yeah. There's a wakeboard place. Like,
I didn't think that any of the Thames was suitable. That's good to know.
Well,
I won't jump in it even if I do well this weekend.
No, don't. I wouldn't.
I've heard bad things jumping in the Thames.
Where is your favourite location? You know what? Sorry, I get asked that question all the time. Where's your favourite place to snowboard?
Where is yours?
So, see, this is the thing. It's changed for me because it's about where the people are.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because
I can imagine so, yeah.
What's a ski resort without your best mates or your crew?
Agreed.
It's all about the creativity.
Or the apres.
Not done much of that in my athlete days. I could do a bit now, though.
Yeah, you can do some now, for sure. Was it hard? Did you find it hard to, like, keep yourself disciplined through that stage of your career? Because it's something I think all athletes have to make that sacrifice with their friends, you know?
I love this. This is a role reversal. On the Monday Mile, yeah. Jake Dennis interviewing me. I didn't find it hard because I was living my dream and I saw it as such a privilege and honour. I'd say I think what's harder is coming out of the sport and maintaining the balance of enjoying yourself while staying fit, which is something that's important to me because I love my wellness.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you find it hard?
I actually don't, to be fair. Like, I feel some people definitely enjoy the party life more than I do, but like, for sure, if there's a party Saturday night and the racing is always done, then yeah, we'd attend, but it's not been something, a massive thing for an issue of myself, but I think it's more like missing social events with your friends. Like, it's difficult to really link up with your schoolmates because you're always away, you know, they're always working on Monday to Friday and then have the weekends off, whereas I'm probably more the opposite. It's more like weekends are always packed for me and probably have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off.
Yeah.
So it's always difficult to find the time, but you know, you have to do it.
It is that balance, right? But what an opportunity sport presents us to travel the world,
100%.
Right? It's so special. In terms of routine then, how do you find managing your diet, staying fit on the road? Because I know through travel, when you're in the BA lounge at Heathrow and there's an all-you-can-eat buffet, it can be tough. So what's your regime to staying, let's use the word, on it?
It's a task for sure, especially for me. I'm quite tall. I'm 6'2", so 6'2" racing drivers are very rare. Like, you don't normally fit people as a stature of mine into a race car like that. Most of them are actually your height. Most guys are along this paddock.
5'2"
Yeah. Most are honestly around about 5'6".
Really?
So 5'6", 5'7". Like, they're quite short guys. So for them, weight isn't an issue at all. Like, they could probably eat all the burgers they want and still be under the weight limit.
Whereas for me, look like this.
Yeah, they'll be the skinny fat, you call it, right? That's what they call
skinny
it.
Fat.
The skinny fat. Whereas for me, my natural stature is generally quite heavy. So I'm just always trying to manage my weight as much as I possibly can. My stature now is like, I'm still 3 kilos overweight. So it's just a bit of a disadvantage to other guys.
Yeah.
But it's something which I've had my whole career. I mean, I could arrive like a stick thin guy, but I'm just not really that.
There's muscular integrity as well, right? When you're at these races on the beach.
Yeah,
Got to keep the glutes and the beach muscles, right?
Exactly. So it's just it's a fine level of trying to get it right. And I feel like the stature I have right now is a good balance of where I want to be.
Let's talk this season.
Yep.
Because you didn't have the best start to the season. And now you're walking this pit lane as the current leader.
Yeah.
How did you turn it around?
I mean, just a big reset, you know. I think having a reset inside the team was important. The morale, especially like after around about 5 rounds, was quite low. We went from leading it to then being nowhere. And it was just, you could feel it inside the team that we just needed a good result. And I could feel the energy inside the team dropping. But, you know, we managed to turn it around and we had a big reset in the team, like I mentioned, and you know, we've had 6 podiums out of 7 races now. So we just beat the record actually for the most of the podiums in one season, which is super cool. I didn't think that podium record was going to be broken for a long time, but yeah, we managed to do it. And leading it, final race on home soil.
Being in the position you're currently in, leading into this home race, does it fill you with confidence, or is there a pressure being on home turf?
I definitely have a buzz and confidence about me because it's my home race. Everyone's here to try and watch me win this thing, but there comes with pressure as well. You know, it's like anything. If you want to perform, the team wants you to perform, everyone's here to watch, it always comes with pressure as well. So it's a combination of both, but right now I'm more excited that it's my home event. I can try and win this thing in front of everyone. So I'll take the extra bit of pressure for the confidence boost I have that when this will all be full on Saturday, it's going to be a real buzz and real energy about about this place.
Having had the rockiest start to the season and being able to turn it around, I know that's not the easiest thing to do. Has that changed your approach and your mindset when it comes to the longevity of your career within the sport?
Yeah, something like which you definitely think about is your career. And you know, I'd say motorsport is a longish career compared to some others, you know, in terms of sport. You know, you're probably looking at like a 42-year-old retirement age if you're good, I would say. So it's something which we already think about already, but I think I just try and take one year at a time and try and just make the best situation I possibly got around me, whether I've got a really strong team, which I do right now. You know, the powertrain's working really well. We've got a good bunch of people around me, so I'm just trying to maximise that as much as possible, because you know, it is a dangerous sport. The cars are super safe nowadays, but if you have a really bad crash, anything can happen and your career can end like that, you know. So there's even more so for you guys, like injuries can be triggered so easily on your knees or anything like that. So I feel like if I was in your position, I'd just want to smash out as much as I possibly could, because you feel like an injury is prominent.
Does it scare you at all, the risk of injury? Risk versus reward?
It scares me getting injured, I would say. What I do doesn't scare me, but just like if I have a bad crash and I'm injured and then I lose the ability to do my job, then obviously I need to change my career path entirely. I need to find a new job. But it's something which comes with any sport, you know. There's always risk versus reward, and right now I'm riding the wave of what we're on, and it's been an incredible wave so far. Hopefully I can still do it for another, I'd say 13-14 years is sort of my target. But yeah, I mean, traveling's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot.
You said you want to move closer to Heathrow.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you on that. You mentioned longevity, 13-14 years additionally. That's a lot of time. The question that instantly springs to mind is the future of motorsport electric?
I personally think it is, yeah. I see these cars now and I drive them and I'm like, the technology we have and how quickly it's evolving, I can't see why it wouldn't be. These cars are super fast, they're developing at such a high rate, and to be involved in this package is really special, and I hope I can continue in Formula E for many of years and really move the whole, you know, championship forward. You know, still young, it's only its ninth season, whereas you look at Formula One where it's been around for many, many, many years. So to try and push this whole program forward is something which I want to do.
Do you think Formula One is taking note from Formula E?
I think they're definitely looking in their shoulder, you know. We're becoming a bigger and bigger brand. Ultimately, it's all under the same hood. It's all run by the FIA, which is the Organisation of Motorsport. But I think they see what we do, and they're definitely pushing towards sustainability as well. You know, they're trying to do the right thing, and I think a lot of businesses are now anyway. They're trying to promote sustainability and do everything they can. But I just think, obviously, Formula E is that much further step ahead.
Do you think there's an opportunity for the two federations to merge and create the wholesome, sustainable tour?
I think it'd be a great spectacle. You know, Formula One do a really good show. You know, it's like a drama series after that Netflix Drive to Survive thing came out. But yeah. I personally think they should always be kept separate. I think Formula One should always try and push, you know, just like Formula One engines and really high-end motorsport, whereas Formula E is pushing a different sustainability side. It will obviously naturally come closer and closer as you know, the world evolves. But right now, I personally don't want to see them merge, because then you lose a lot of drivers as well. Yeah. Like the level of drivers in here, the level of drivers in Formula One is so high. And if they merge, then you're losing like 22 drivers.
Okay, let's keep it separate. We don't need that.
We keep that separate.
More opportunities for more people. That's what we love.
That's what we love.
That's why we love sport. We have to ask you, because you are on the Monday Mile podcast, what's your relationship like with Monday as a Formula E driver?
I'm generally all for Mondays, you know.
Because it's your day off.
It is generally my day off. You know, I can completely understand why people hate Mondays on a normal 9-to-5 job, but Mondays are my days off. Mondays are, I probably had a takeaway or something like that. It's my full relaxed day, and then it's back to training Tuesday morning. So Mondays I'm all for.
Love that. And lastly, for anyone looking to emulate a career like yours, what advice would you give?
What advice would I give? Be prepared to sacrifice a lot. I think in any top level sport, you need to sacrifice from such a young age. But you know, if you really want it, it's hard work, dedication, and you got to enjoy it as well. You really have to enjoy the sport which you do, and to spend that much time away from home, and yeah, never give up. Like everyone always says, opportunities are always around the corner, and anything can happen in such a short space of time.
And lastly, Jake, you've pretty much given us your one-liner, but I'm going to open up the conversation. Do you have any life mottos or quotes that you will be living by this weekend when you're driving at this home race?
Oh, life mottos, what would I say? Maybe the only form of defense is attack, I would say, because it's very easy to be in the position I'm in and just keep trying to stay out of trouble and stuff like this, but I need to push forward and stay out of trouble and attack my opposition, so I'd probably say that.
Beautiful words. You can feel the fire under that belt. Jake Dennis, thank you so much for joining us
here. No worries, thanks for having me.
On the Monday Mark Walk and Talk podcast, to those of you listening, that was a fiery little punchline at the end there, Jake. I love that. You know what to do. Make sure you subscribe. The audio will be dropping every single Monday in the early hours for you to plug into, so make sure you're on that. Monday Mar listeners, have an absolutely epic week. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
Boom.